From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Midnight Movie Cowboys. I am Mr. Hunter Dusing, and joining me is Mr. Stuart Balk over in Australia. Say hello, Stuart.
Where's Craven's dad? My life's over.
Hello. And we also have Mr. John Grace, Rocky Mountain High, Colorado.
Say hello, dude. John. Dude. Just got back from 10 marijuana stores today, bro.
You rock some edibles, brah.
Stop by the medicine store, quote unquote. Conveniently, bro. There's like a hamburger stand next to it, and there's like a Subway.
Did they have some green chilies, bro?
I'm gonna tell you.
They have cream of hash and barley soup, man.
But so
it's organic, bro. It can't hurt you. it's cyanide, bro, but it still can't hurt
man.
You.
Hey, man, nothing that, like, comes from the earth can hurt you. You know what I'm saying, bro?
Well, we got a good friend of ours who's in love with Mother Earth, but we won't even bother contacting him right now.
So, Stuart, you brought up the death of Mr. Wes Craven.
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, I didn't know Wes Craven was that old. I thought maybe he was like in his 60s or something. I didn't realize he was in his 70s. But like his death, I was kind of like, what? Kind of came out of nowhere. But like Wes Craven, I think he was pretty overrated as a horror filmmaker. But like he made some movies I like, but you know, his name's been synonymous with horror.
Oh yeah.
I don't really think he was, you know, this one of the great masters. You know, he just made some successful films. But I mean, a lot of his movies were pretty bad, but he made some good ones. But I don't know. You know what it is?
His name rolled off the tongue as a horror film like Wes Craven.
It screams horror director.
You don't see people crying when George Hickenlooper dies or whatever the hell that guy's name is.
George Hicken.
The basket case guy is like, oh, George Hickenlooper's dead.
But you know, like Wes Craven, like nobody went to go see Music from the Heart, you know? His Meryl Streep movie about music school.
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah. Or Brooklyn Vampire, what the hell, that Eddie Murphy.
Vampire in Brooklyn.
Oh, he was one of those guys who always complained about being typed in the horror genre. That's all he made. It's all he was good at.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people realize he had the option to do First Blood back in the 70s.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
He had the option for a while, and he couldn't get the money together to produce it, but he liked the novel, and he was going to film First Blood back then. And funny thing is, you'll notice in a lot of his movies from The Hills Have Eyes and on, always have these survival trap stuff,
action movies.
The heroes are doing booby traps and stuff on the villains, and I think some of that came from obsession he had with, like, when he was researching First Blood. Like, you know, obviously they were going to have John Rambo set traps and stuff. They hadn't established the guy picking up an M60 and blasting away the town. Well, they did in the 80s. If they'd done in the 70s, it would have been a different movie, probably more faithful.
Because Craven's movies often have that syndrome where they would turn into action movies, you know, at the end.
He was really the one who started the horror as action type thing.
Could you guys imagine
under the stairs, you know?
Yeah. Could you guys imagine First Blood with Michael Berryman as Troutman? That would have been way better as well.
Oh God.
He'd have had John Saxon as Troutman.
Oh yeah, true actually. Yeah, definitely.
He'd have had like John Saxon as Troutman and some skinny actor as Rambo.
Johnny Depp.
All right. Well, back then in the 70s, I'd say you'd probably be casting an unknown, Bruce Campbell or something like that.
Yeah.
So, like, what did you guys think of, like, what are some movies of his you liked? Like, because, most of his movies I'm not too big on.
Mine's People Under the Stairs is my favorite.
Yeah?
Yeah, I really like that a lot. I think the first Elm Street's way overblown, like, way overrated. Hills Have Eyes is way overrated. It's actually pretty boring for the most part.
Well, and Hills Have Eyes is like, I think it's kind of considered a compromised horror movie, isn't it? Like, because it was really truncated and cut down and...
Not really. No? You're thinking of Last House on the
Left.
Had a crazy rep as having 10 different versions, and if you found the Canadian videotape, it was more complete. And it did have scenes that were not in the American prints, and, like, it was just all over the place.
Well, I thought Last House was a movie that lost its nerve, because, you know, it's this supposed to be a shocking horror movie, but you keep cutting back and forth between this cop comedy routine, you know?
Well, I think it was intended as a grindhouse roughy, and they just ended up making a horror film.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so, but a lot of the humor takes you out of it, and I never cared for it. I don't care for that type of horror film. It's just boring to me. It's like stuff that happens. Go read the newspaper if you want to see that type of crime, you know? It's like...
Yeah.
I just don't care. It's dull, but...
There was a good...
It has its fans. Whatever.
Yeah,
I like Swamp Thing, even though it's not a good movie. I think it's
honestly,
fun.
His movies that I like was Swamp Thing because I saw it in a theater when I was a kid and I enjoyed it because back then
Adrian Barbeau, Jesus,
yeah. Adrian Barbeau looked great in it, and it was at that time it was so rare to see any comic book movie, and that was the first one after Superman, and plus it was a comic book I liked that was obscure that nobody else read, like Swamp Thing. I was like, yeah. You know, it was great fun. And I liked Hills Have Eyes when I saw it when I was 15. I have not been successful trying to watch it on DVD.
What about,
I buy it on DVD, and I can't get through it.
What about Part 2?
Part 2 is horrid.
Yeah. The only film that
does
have
a dog's flashback.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, the only film to have a point of view from a dog or a dog flashback in it.
It's the type of thing you get from, like, a Chris Elliott TV show or something.
But that one of the
last episode of Get a Life.
Yeah. There was one of the comic book projects he tried to get was Superman 4.
And
yeah, he said he interviewed to direct Superman 4, and he said that Christopher Reeve said that he heard that Christopher Reeve said Wes Craven will never direct my film or something like that.
What?
To that effect. That's what he said in an interview I saw.
Because Sidney J. Ferry did such a better job.
Mm-hmm.
He might have seen Deadly Friend and thought, well, somebody gets their head knocked off with a basketball. I don't want this guy in a Superman movie, really.
Was that one he did with Ernest Borgnine? Deadly Blessing or something?
No, that's Deadly Blessing. No, he did Deadly Friend as well in 1986.
Okay.
Yeah,
that was based on a young adult novel that, because the movie didn't test good, because Wes Craven's name was on it, they added horror gore scenes to it to give it an R rating.
Oh, God. Yeah, it's not great at all. If you look at the overall filmography of his, and this is going to sound bad for those of you still pouring, you know, crying into your Jack Daniels, but he didn't make that many good movies, really.
No, well, that's what I was saying. Like, Wes Craven's, I don't think a lot of his movies are that good. Like, I like a handful of them, but I think there's a lot more misses than hits in there. I think there's a few hits in there that were phenomenons, and that's just kind of given him his reputation, like Nightmare on Elm Street and Scream and stuff like that.
Well, the most creative one he did was at Elm Street 7, that New Nightmare.
New Nightmare, yeah. Which was kind of
that was easily the best in the series.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was the prototype for Scream 2 at this sort of postmodern horror movie.
I hated the Scream films. I thought they were just stupid.
I like the first one. The sequels, not so much.
I enjoyed the first one in the theater. I hate the sequels. The two sequels I saw. I guess there have been more since.
Well, there was Scream 4. Was Craven's last film, actually?
Yeah.
Okay. So there was a Scream 4. Weird.
They churned out that Scream 2 so freaking quick as well. I couldn't believe that was so
too
fast.
Quick. It was just the demand for Weinstein's.
Yeah.
Yeah. And both Scream 2 and 3 just. The whole idea, it was just out of gas, you know, the idea. And
with
Scream 4, it's the reboot. You know, the Scream 4, the whole idea is the reboot, where Scream 2 is a sequel. Scream 3, I don't know what the fuck they thought they were doing, but...
Scream 4 was Arquette's heroin money.
Yeah. Well, his TV work, I thought, was better than a lot of his movies.
Right, the Twilight Zone stuff.
The Twilight Zone stuff, and the Twilight Zone 80s, to remind our listeners.
Yeah, yeah, not the old school stuff.
The revival that had Harlan Ellison working for it for like a year or two. And he also did TV movies. He did one called Chiller with Michael Beck that I thought was pretty smart. We actually watched it in our theology class in like ninth grade.
Really?
Where it was like he was – Michael Beck was one of those guys who died, but his mother had him – frozen cryogenically or whatever, and they revived him, or he accidentally became revived a few years later, and then, but of course he's somewhat like obviously sociopathic, and the priest is so concerned. He goes, but if he died, you know, and then you brought him back to life, where did his soul go? So it's like he's back, but he has no soul. So they're dealing with psychotic Michael Beck. I mean, it's a TV movie, and you can find apparently some terrible-looking copies on those dollar DVD sets. But I remember it being pretty decent back then.
I remember watching or rewatching Shocker maybe a couple of years ago when I did.
That's one I never saw.
I did a stint on Terror. I did a guest thing on Terror Troop a couple of years back, and one of the films that we covered was Shocker, and I was really jazzed to see it again. I hadn't seen it in a long time, and I love the soundtrack. I've still got the soundtrack on CD in the garage, one of the very few I've got left, and cool, I want to see Shocker again, and I got through it, I'm like, oh, this is not good.
I fucking hated that. When I saw a friend of mine, and I saw it, like, opening night or something, and we were just laughing our asses off at how bad it was. I think it sounds like the little girl's, like, piloting a bulldozer, and she's cursing. I was like, This movie just gave up. It totally gave up.
Well, yeah. I never saw it, because when I read the premise, I said, that's just Elm Street again. You know?
It really is.
Oh, he was trying to replicate the success. He didn't have the rights to Freddy Krueger. New Line Cinema always held on to those, and then apparently he got them back after they went out of business.
Yeah. What'd you guys think of Serpent and the Rainbow?
It was okay.
I thought it was pretty decent.
I own it. Yeah, it's okay.
One of better films.
Yeah, it's definitely.
I don't think it's great, but it's interesting. Kind of an interesting, one of those voodoo zombie movies, as opposed to, you know,
yeah,
bitey zombie movies.
Meteor creation zombie nonsense.
Space slug zombies.
Yeah, I think I mentioned before on the show in the past. I went and I was a frequent film goer when I was working in the CBD in my early 20s, and. The people under the stairs came out, and they had the review in the paper, and it was like 5 out of 5. I'm like, I got to see it. And I was like, it can't be this bad. Like, it was maligned. Like, in the paper, it was maligned as fuck.
You're just like me, Stu. Like, whenever I opened those, like, Leonard Maltin film guides, yeah. I would see the ones that said 1/2 star. I'd be like, I got to watch that.
Yeah,
and I went and watched
a picture of a turkey.
Yeah, I went and watched that night after I'd finished work, and I had an absolute... fucking ball with it. I thought it was funny. It was, it had some good scares, and I thought, what's this guy watching? You know, and
critics hated horror movies by proxy back then. It was a horror movie automatically. It wasn't going to get higher than like 2 stars in any.
People Under the Stairs is pretty rad. You got the black kid in the house with like the BDSM couple with shotguns running around. It's just a crazy freaking.
It is.
Movie.
It is a crazy flick. It's still my favorite of his, as I said, and it pretty much went downhill from there. You know,
critics hated genre movies, though. That's why it always got a bad review.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, but I mean, I couldn't get over the amount of outpouring for Craven's death. Yeah, I was bummed out, but I mean, I didn't sit there and post repeatedly about it. I'm like, oh, jeez.
Well, you know? I was more just, like, surprised by it. Like, I just didn't expect it. But, like, Craven's not a beloved director to me, so I wasn't, like, super sad, like, because none of his movies are favorite movies of mine, but... I was kind of like, what? Like,
yeah,
really?
Yeah, it wasn't like you heard that he was on his last legs and had been for a while.
I would have expected John Carpenter to die before him.
Yeah, or Romero.
I mean, both of them look old, like they smoke more cigarettes and drink more booze than...
Yeah.
Romero is obese, and Carpenter looks like a skeleton.
Yeah, Carpenter looks way older than he is.
Carpenter,
I know, like, he always has. That's the funny thing.
He's doing live shows now, like, of his music.
Really?
Yeah, he's announced live dates.
I thought he would have been found dead, killed over in front of a PlayStation 4 or something.
Yeah, beating off the porn or something.
Yeah, he pretty much admitted all he does is watch porn and play video games.
Really?
Jesus
Christ. And he might watch college basketball, and that's about it. Like, he just, that's all he does.
Actually, speaking of spinning the wheel of who's to die soon, Stephen King can't be far off. He looks fucking horrible.
Yeah, well, he never looked good since he was run over by the truck.
I was about to say, he got hit by a car, you know.
Yeah.
Some overdrive there.
Yeah, really. Yeah, really. But I mean, yeah. And the little drugs would do that for you as well. Yeah, so that was it about Wes Craven. I was like, yeah, it was like, okay, he's died. You know, it's a chapter of my life as a young guy growing up watching films over with. But I hadn't really invested in any of his films for a number of years.
What movies do you like of his, Stu? Like, let's get a rundown of what movies we like that Craven directed.
Okay, well, my favorite, like I said, is People Under the Stairs. Definitely. I mean, I kind of dig Last House on the Left. It's it is what it is. It's overrated. People sit there and go, they get scared by it. It's like, I didn't get scared by it. I never have. And I'd be surprised if anybody really did get scared by it.
I didn't get scared. I thought it was kind of like depraved when I first saw it when I was much younger, but you know.
Yeah. Actually, the most entertaining thing about Last House on the Left, if you can get the Blu-ray or the DVD with the David Hess and Fred Lincoln commentary, it's fucking out of control. It's really, really good.
And David Hess is another guy who died not too long ago.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, thankfully that was done before his passing. So it was that. I don't mind the first Elm Street. I don't mind Elm Street 3. That's okay. It's
well, she didn't direct, so
yeah.
That's right. He had a hand on it. Sorry, yeah, but he
co-wrote the script with Bruce Wagner.
I was about to say with Bruce Wagner, who was of recently all people, on the Ellis podcast.
Who's really a strange guy. He's like married to Rebecca De Mornay. He's like
fucking weird.
He's the top disciple of Carlos Castaneda. I think he took over his cult, and he's also like a Republican. He's like a bunch of different odd, far-ranging things.
He also wrote Cronenberg's last movie, Map of the Stars.
Yeah, he's strange.
Yeah, he's a weird dude.
If you could find that video of him and James Ellroy and Rose McGowan at the table, which it's still on YouTube. It's pretty goddamn funny.
He was on the Bret Easton Ellis podcast recently, and it felt like him and Ellis were having two different conversations. It was very strange.
It felt like they were speaking two different languages.
Yeah. Like, Ellis would ask him a question, and then Bruce would talk about something completely different. It's very
strange. Examining the inside of a brain as if when you're writing and expressing feelings in the brain, and Ellis would be like, so, when you got out of acting and went to writing, what was that like? Well, I believe that the nerve center is like kind of like what Dickens used to do, and I wanted to write 900-page novels. I mean, it was just like strange.
Yeah. That's pretty dead on, John. Yeah.
I only listened to it once, like months ago, and I just remember the conversation just like that.
I would say also Swamp Thing, and I actually enjoyed Deadly Blessing. I think it's one of his more underrated ones.
I've never seen it. A lot of people told me they liked it.
The Incubus. Yeah, I didn't mind it. That's got Michael Berryman Michael Berryman as well in there. So,
John, what about you?
I guess Swamp Thing and New Nightmare and TV Work.
Actually, New Nightmare is all shit. Sorry, I forgot about that.
Yeah, I put New Nightmare up there. I just not a big Craven fan. His movies were always half-assed.
Yeah, I mean,
they're always a half-assed feeling. They would fall apart in the third act. Nightmare on Elm Street's a perfect example of that. And they're just kind of half-assed. Like, they'd have something really. He would really front-load his movies with all the jump scares in the beginning, and then it was almost like he ran out of ideas or fighting with executives over the third act, and that just seemed to always hurt stuff.
Like. Because Elm Street
and he was
really
bitter too. He was always bitter. He was always like, Swamp Thing, the producer stiffed us, and we ran out of money, and then we had to rewrite the script. Like that, and that was every film he worked on. You know, they stiffed us, and then they cut the budget, and I had to rewrite the script. And you know, it wasn't really till Scream that he had like a full blast. Like, okay, and whatever you want. Scream saved Miramax's ass for years.
Yeah, it was a cash cow for them. Mm-hmm. Well, so I think mine would be I like Swamp Thing quite a bit. Nightmare on Elm Street, I think, has a lot of good stuff in it. I enjoyed Serpent and the Rainbow. I don't know if I'd like it if I saw it again. I need to see it again. New Nightmare. I enjoy Scream, and People Under the Stairs has some fun moments for me. But I need to check out some of the TV work.
Yeah.
People like the one with Linda Blair. I think it's called Stranger in the House or something.
Stranger in the House, yeah, that's it. I've never seen it, but I know
of
it.
I've never seen it either. I saw it on TV years ago. I just don't remember it very well.
I think he wrote a few books as well, didn't he?
He wrote a novel or two.
Yeah, he did too.
He was trying to be the new Robin Cook. They were like medical thrillers. he was like a really well-educated guy. I mean, he had he had serious college degrees. He just ended up in porn and then ended up doing cheap horror movies.
Yeah. I wonder if John Carpenter watches Swamp Thing and bats off to his ex-wife in it.
Probably not. I probably got sick of fucking her. I hate to say it.
Probably, yeah.
It seems impossible, but I think he just got tired of screwing her. You know, he was a drunk. If you read her autobiography, it just sounds like they just got distant suddenly.
Like, really?
He was more interested in staying up all night watching movies and drinking. And, you know, they really grew apart.
Gonna watch Howard Hawks films all night instead.
He'd rather watch like Howard Hawks movies all night long.
Yeah.
He got tired of her, I guess.
Yeah, she walks out in a corset and a bra, and he's like, fuck off, I'm watching The Thing from Another World again.
Yeah.
But that also happens when you watch too much porn, too.
Yeah, you know. That's true. And he probably
was interested in women.
Yeah. Yeah. So what do you guys reckon about the bullshit story going around about Dirty Harry getting remade? I fell for that one.
Oh, that was I knew immediately because it was like the Fatso Times or something. I was like, that's
if you looked on it, it was like Scarlett Johansson was playing like a Mulan or something in a movie next year. It was all these.
Oh, God, I didn't look.
It's just like clickbait. It's so easy to get people pissed off at stuff.
Now. Well, I'm reading that thing on my bloody phone. I'm like, I haven't got time to really scroll. I'm like, you gotta be shit me, really.
If I see something shocking like that makes me go like, what the fuck? I always look at the, because I saw that and I was like, no. And I just saw the portlygazelle.com and I was like, oh, well, that's not real.
Gara and I have a standard, like, if it's not reported in Variety or the Hollywood Reporter, we don't pay attention to it.
Or Deadline.
Our Deadline, and that's it. It's like those are only. It has to be a legit news source. Otherwise, if you haven't heard of it, it's baloney.
Mm. Okay.
One of the worst that people pick up on is Latino Review. Latino Review will just make shit up, and people.
Supermax never responsible for that. Is that one of his?
I think so.
But, son of a bitch.
No, but that Latino Review. It's like anytime if you can find. If you can find a news site and a news story, and if it sounds fishy, if it comes from Latino Review, guaranteed it's made up.
Here's the script, the master shot script for Star Wars, the new whatever. You know, it's like it's always like that. They'll always post like entire synopses and everything and casting. And I think somebody said they're right 40% of the time, which is kind of just basically saying they're making it up.
Jeez. I'm dreading that new Star Wars coming out. I'm absolutely. Yeah. Not so much the film because I'm not going to see it. I have no interest, zero interest. Right. I'm just going to fucking disappear from social media. I really just feel like disappearing from it.
I'm thinking about doing it too.
It's just going to be a clusterfuck.
We're not going to record any shows for a couple of weeks. I think around Christmas.
Nah.
So let's just
You can imagine the flood of podcasts coming out as soon as they've just like.
Oh, it's going
to
be.
People just go to the midnight screening of the first episode or the first screening of the first day and like, let's race home and do a podcast at 3 in the morning. It's like, okay, really?
What would be funny is all the podcasts with people who bitch about how Star Wars ruined movies are going to feel obligated to do a review. And it's like, can't ignore it. Because it's just a kid's film. So you can ignore it.
Yeah.
It's not going to destroy your podcast rep. It's like you can just ignore the fucking thing. It's like, no, because they really want to see it anyway.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You lost me at Black Stormtrooper. I'm not saying black folks shouldn't be in space and shit, but I'm just saying that,
Well, and here's what kind of made me roll my eyes at that. Was the actor who plays the character John Boyega.
Yeah.
he posted something on social media where he said, like, yes, it's real, and yes, get used to it, to all the sort of imaginary racist Star Wars fans out there. It's just kind of like, oh, yeah, all the, like, oh, a couple of people said stormtroopers ain't black. Like,
well, really, stormtroopers don't remove their helmets to begin with, let alone be black.
I think he's a stormtrooper. He's a person pretending to be a stormtrooper because he's running around in all the other trailers without a stormtrooper outfit on. Oh, okay. So I think it's like a first movie where Luke and Han dress as stormtroopers.
He goes in disguise. He's going to escape out of a hatch. He's going to land in a bale of hay.
Yeah,
he's take off his helmet. He's be like, "It's bloody hot in there," you know. And he's
just like, "We ain't found shit."
Yeah,
probably be the first time that a black person's worn a suit, a completely white suit with eyes in, cut out as well. I guess.
No. Garrow's one black friend has worn that. didn't I post a photo?
Oh, that one. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
So John, you posted something on Facebook the other day, and I was curious. I thought it would be good for the podcast.
Uh-huh.
I was like, I want John to elaborate on this. So you posted a link to a Kickstarter by Rick Myers.
Yeah.
Rick Myers. And it was this, and it was this pod Kickstarter he was doing to like interview people, and it had barely any pledges. And, and you said like, the only time I'm going to laugh at a crowdfunding effort failing. And
yeah. Well, before we start, can you just clue in who Rick Myers is? I don't know who he is either.
Yeah, because I've heard of him, but right. I don't know much about him or the sort of, I guess, bullshit he's done in the past. Because your post got a lot of comments of people go like, and I was like, there is a story here that I do not know.
Well, it's old Hong Kong movie fan stuff. But Rick
I figured it was like enticing, crash.
Oh, boy, it's really hard to actually accumulate all this information. But Rick wrote a book with three other writers for Bruce Lee, The Ninjas, which was the first and for the longest time, the only book on the martial arts movie genre published in America. And for something in 1986, it was fine. You know, it was a good start. You know, you hope, okay, eventually there'll be better movie books about the genre. It had a lot of mistakes, but, you know, we didn't have the internet back then to check stuff and everything, so you could kind of let a lot of things slide. By today's standards, it's not very good, but back then it was, you know, it was like a Bible in the desert or whatever the hell. And for a genre that nobody wrote about, nobody wrote anything about those movies from Hong Kong. It didn't exist in Leonard Maltin's books, you know. A few years later, I had corresponded with Rick a few times, and he was always good about answering questions and stuff. He seemed like a nice guy. He was running a fanzine with a guy out of Los Angeles, and for years, that was like the only Hong Kong movie fanzine covering the new Hong Kong films. And that was the only way to keep up with stuff that was playing in Chinatowns, and I lived way too far away from a Chinatown to see this stuff. So, you know, I would order videotapes from Chinatown theaters. I mean, not theaters. This video company, Rainbow Audio and Video. Rainbow later changed its name to Pan Asia Video and then changed its name to Tai Sing. And yes, they're the same company that sued Garrow for like $1 million. In the mid-90s, Rick was writing for Asian Trash Seminars and revealed himself to also be the director of these bondage porn flicks, but I guess that's irrelevant to the discussion. But was starting to write articles where... he was also a columnist for Inside Kung Fu. He became the movie columnist after they fired S.E. Dacey or S.E. Dacey quit. That's another long story I can't get into right now. There might be some of this information in one of our episodes with Garrow.
What did S.E. Dacey have to do with Asian movies?
S.E. Dacey, he managed Sybil Danning, and he was like a lunatic Hollywood press agent who was basically a has-been. He tried to orchestrate a movie produced by Ed Pressman and to be directed by Sammo Hung in like 1987, very early on. He was really the first guy in Hollywood to think we need to get, you know, Sammo Hung or one of these top Hong Kong action directors to make a movie in America. Like, you got to bring him over here. And
is that the Sammo Hung film that where everybody just rapes everybody in it?
No, it wasn't the one that Garrow mentioned. No. It was supposed to be, basically, people who've seen the script treatment said it was an Escape from New York ripoff, but it was supposed to star Sammo's wife at the time, Joyce Godenzi, or Mina. She's also known as Mina Hung. She was doing some film. She was in Eastern Condor, where she gets both of her hands sliced off.
Hannah.
She was supposed to star as the hero. Sybil Danning was also supposed to be in the film as a villain, and it was basically a female fighting film that was going to have Hong Kong style action scenes in a futuristic setting, and it never happened. And Daisy kind of became a washed up lunatic in Hollywood, stalking people, and later on, Garo would prank him like every day because Daisy was threatening him. There may be some of this information in one of Garo's previous appearances. I never listened to the show, so I can't remember. But anyway. Back to Rick Myers. Rick Myers was writing this column, and it became apparent, like, he hooked up with Taising Video. Taising Video decided they were going to move outside of the Chinatown territories, and they were going to start issuing really bad DVDs to the American market with Rick Myers' commentary. And on the commentary, Rick doesn't know anything about these films. It's like, well, gee, did he just not research it, anything, like, after he had the book published? And, like, the commentaries were really bad. And, Rick was promoting himself as the expert on Hong Kong kung fu cinema. And you can't call yourself an expert of the genre when there's too many fucking movies. There's too much to know. There's too many actors, too many styles. I mean, it was a highly productive foreign film market. It was just, you can't be, no one's an expert. Nobody knows that everything about that genre. So Rick published a more recent book that was sort of a follow-up to From Bruce Lee the Ninja, and I think it was called Films of Fury, and there's a documentary that's a companion piece to it, and the documentary is Rick really didn't have a lot to do with it, but it was based on his book, and the documentary is terrible. You can watch it on Netflix. It's horrible, and I understand it's playing on El Rey Network a lot, and it's just poorly edited, doesn't get the point of the cinema or kung fu movies at all. It's just it's like animated with like a video store clerk. Oh, you know, where the hell are those guys these days? That doesn't even exist as a job anymore. Who sounds like Quentin Tarantino. It's just like an animated Quentin Tarantino video store clerk trying to tell an uninformed renter about kung fu movies. And the thing is just really bad. And Rick's new book, a friend gave me his copy. I read it, and I thought the book was really bad. And I had met Rick, and I thought he was an okay guy, and everything was really nice. And read the book, and I was like, oh my God, this is really bad. I mentioned on this podcast a couple of years back that I had read his book and did not care for it, and I don't recommend it. So Rick on Facebook, he was my Facebook friend, he blocked me. So I was like, oh, you son of a bitch. And then I mentioned to some fellow fans who were part of the fanzine scene back then. I go like, is Rick Myers still on Facebook? And they go, yeah. And he goes, that son of a bitch blocked me. And I go, oh my God, what did you do to offend him? And it's like, I don't know. And then I said, oh, maybe he listens to the podcast and he heard me diss the book. So I said, because I wasn't real big on it. I was pretty restrained and very nice about how much I dislike the book. Because, I mean, it's just like basic mistakes that anybody writing a book on that genre should know. The first one you'll hear about if you go to the Amazon reviews, this is real technical, but he said, I am not going to call Liu Chaoliang by his, he called it his Mandarin name, Lau Kar Lung. When I'm going to call him by his Cantonese name, Liu Jialiang. This is a very technical thing, but I'm like, okay, Liu Jialiang is his Mandarin name. You should know that by now. Lau Kar Lung is his Cantonese name. You should know that by now. There's a difference between the languages and the way the names are. It's like, if you've seen enough of these movies, you know that. Like, I'd seen maybe 20 of these films and already knew the difference between Mandarin and Cantonese.
I don't think you'd even need to see 20 to get that.
Fuck no. When you read his original book, he says Liu Jialiang is his Mandarin name. So it's like, what the hell does he even? And it was almost like the book was written like in a couple of afternoons with no research, didn't double check anything with the IMDb because on every page there's like a mistake. And I was just like, I can't believe he was trying to foist this junk off on readers. Like, he's an expert of the genre. It's crazy to me. And so like he started crowdfunding for some documentary where he's going to go to Hong Kong with Frank Dejing, who used to work for the now completely out of business Taising. And if anybody wants to act like Taising was this honorable business because they sued Garo, keep in mind that they were offering a streaming service in 2012 that went out of business pretty quick. That was their last existence. And they were still charging people's credit card in 2013. And leading to a lot of consumer complaints. Scumbag company. They always were. And their
DVDs blew, too.
They were the worst. Like, their Touch of Zen is an embarrassment. I need to sell it.
I have the Touch of Zen DVD, and it's shit.
It's awful. It's ghosting, garbage. It's like, even it looks like a VHS copy from, like, 1982. It's that bad. Yeah. And so he was saying he wanted to raise $64,000 or something like that to go to Hong Kong and interview all these actors and directors and kind of have an archive of interviews. Like, you couldn't really understand what it was looking at the crowdfunding thing. First of all, nobody trusts him enough. The only people who still trust him are young fans new to the genre who read his book and think, because he presents himself as an expert, that they're getting the whole story. And I think he needed $65,000 and he raised about $6,000. Because, I mean, people are wise to his bullshit. I mean, it's like, you can look up, okay, friend of mine wrote this 9-part series or 8-part series called The Tao of Rick. And it's literally like 8 parts. It's on the Cool Ass Cinema website. I do recommend it. It tells the whole story in detail. He just rips apart every horror, stupid thing Rick ever did. And it's, I mean, it's pretty vicious. It's like character assassination on the internet.
I was going to say 8 parts. That's pretty freaking lengthy.
It's true. The thing is, it's true. And that guy told me stuff like in private message. He says, I can't put this on the articles. I don't have it confirmed, but he told me stories that were even worse than what's on there. So it's like, but because he doesn't have confirmation, you have to confirm things from several sources to actually put this up, and you have to prove it's true in case you're sued about it. It's like, it's not going up there, but it's like, I don't know. It sounds pretty true. But, so he was doing his little crowdfunding for some documentary he was going to make himself, and he was going to take Frank DeJing, who used to be a top guy at Tai Sing, with him as a translator, and they were going to go to Hong Kong, and he needed $65,000 to interview all these guys, and I was just like, So I posted the crowdfunding thing because I knew he was going to fail, and there was no way in hell he was going to make it, and his crowdfunding pitch was also put together so poorly. It just, other than people not trusting him, if you didn't know who he was and you saw that crowdfunding video, like you guys are asking me, if you watch the crowdfunding video, it's not really apparent what's going on.
Who's that woman? Is it Mina Hung?
She goes by the name Mina. She was called Joyce Godenzi for a while.
Yeah.
And I think they quit using that name because, okay, when S.C. Dacey was trying to make High Caliber, get it together.
That's high voltage. It is. It's not High Caliber.
High Caliber was the name of his script. What happened was, supposedly, and I was told this by a Hong Kong casting guy, he said, what I heard was, because if you ask Sammo would not tell you why he didn't make the movie and why, and he said, don't mention S.C. Dacey to me because I don't want to talk about that guy. So what I was told by this Hong Kong producer, he said, what happened was Dacey hit on Mina. He made a pass at Mina, and then Sammo left the production and it didn't happen. And so it's like, and that's Dacey because Dacey was got in trouble, I think, for stalking Sophia Crawford, who had been a Hong Kong actress and stunt woman who came to America and was doubling for Sarah Michelle Gellar on Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And he was stalking her, and it was all part of a stalker's documentary on one of those documentary channels on like Discovery or whatever the cable channel was that was showing those type of crime docs. And they had footage of S.E. Dacey walking down the street, and he looks like some fat con geek, like on his way to a magic convention.
Like Harry Knowles?
Yeah. He's like that. And Sophia Crawford's kind of like, and he was stalking me, and he's leaving these messages, and he sent me a dildo in the mail and all this stuff, and Punisher comic books. They show this sap, and it's like, oh, my God. Should just go down there with a hammer and beat the hell out of him.
It's because Asian guys, they call themselves Me No Hung.
Yeah. Mina was like, I met.
It took me 20 minutes to get to the joke, but whatever.
Yeah. Well, apparently she's a Jehovah's Witness, and I don't know if she's converted Sammo.
Imagine getting up Sunday morning, Sammo Hung knocks on your door.
Excuse me. Yeah. Then you slam the door in his face, and he does his yell and his back kick.
Yeah, he does like one of those Peking opera moves.
Yeah, like Sammo and Prince.
Well, I talked to the stuntman who worked on Martial Law with Sammo and was like one of the regular guys getting beat up by Sammo every week. And
yeah.
J.J. Perry, who now choreographs like big movies. He did Haywire with Gina Carano and some other big films. And J.J. told me, he goes, Sammo had a thing, like I guess the fights were kind of improvised a little bit, but Sammo would do one yell, hey! And he would go, hot! And then the next move, when he went, hi, he knew he was going to hit you with the back kick. So you got ready for the back kick.
All right. It was all in the yelling. There's a film I wouldn't mind doing sometime in the future.
The signal.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind doing that friggin' Winners and Sinners. That was a fucking fantastic film, that one.
Oh, yeah. I love those early 80s Samuel films. Made
Harvest, we ought to cover that one day. Winners and Sinners.
Yeah, we should.
That'd
be a good one.
Yeah, definitely.
Talk about the whole Lucky Stars film movement and all that. The stuff that was going on in early 80s Hong Kong cinema was pretty exciting. But, yeah, that's the Rick Meyer story, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
I don't know if it does.
It does, yeah. Did you guys see, there's another article John posted earlier on today, a picture of Burt Reynolds at, what was it at? Wizard World Comic Con. Yeah.
Yeah.
First thing it screamed out, have you seen the picture, Hannah?
Yeah, I saw it.
The first thing he yelled at me when I saw, or screamed at me when I saw that was, he's finally got the black eyes he'd been giving Sally Field and Lonnie Anderson all those years ago. Now he knows how they felt. He looks fucked.
I wanted to tell Mike Barron to stop spreading Bert has AIDS rumors.
Oh.
You should have. Mike will get it. It's funny because I was reading... I found one of Mike's old Punisher graphic novels at a comic book store the other day. It's out of print, actually hard to find for a decent price. And in it, a jet pilot crashes. And remember, this came out in like 1987. A jet pilot crashes a jet into the top floor of a hotel building to kill a senator. And I said, and I asked Mike on instant message, I was just like, did you get a call from the CIA after 9/11? When they were supposedly calling all these writers and directors and artists about, you know, similar possibilities of attacks or inspiration. He was like, oh, they're at my door right now. I said, well, I had to make a call to Homeland Security. You know, like that's what NSA thinking is the American way these days.
Jesus.
But yeah, when I saw that, I was like, oh, Christ, this is a jet going into a building, something that everybody claims now. Oh, we can't imagine anybody doing that. Nobody thought that they'd come up with that. Well, here it is on a comic book in 1987.
There you go.
Thanks, Mike.
On that note, we'll take a break and we'll be back in a few moments.
Hello, friends. Do you not have enough geek in your life? Are you made fun of because you know the exact name and alphanumerical designation of every single droid in Star Wars? Do you know how to perform a wedding ceremony entirely in Klingon? Have you created a timeline about the Marvel Cinematic Universe and then tried to convince everyone that yours is the definitive one? Do you have a TARDIS as your everyday means of travel? Do you find yourself relating to many of the characters in Kevin Smith's films? If the answer to these questions is yes, then we have a podcast for you. The United States of Geekdom. Now in its fourth year of talking about what makes us geeks go tick, we bring you the finest in geekiness and a place for you to find like-minded people in this awesome community. Find us at www.unitedstatesofgeekdom.com. And now, we are proud to announce that we are now members of the community at projectnerd.com. Get your geek on.
And we're back. Okay, what else you guys been up to? If you haven't worked out from this, it's just a freeform show. We're just dating ourselves immediately by what we're talking about. It's a freeform.
Who wants to ask me about what I posted on Facebook the other day? Who else? What else you got?
I haven't got time for that sort of crap.
Well, I just wanted to bring that up because I was like, I want more info on that.
And the whole Rick Meyers thing? Google Rick Meyers Cool Ass Cinema and read the story and I'll tell you everything.
Yeah, I found that, but like before when I Googled Rick Meyers, I just found like, oh, he was a supposed expert or something.
Yeah,
which is a bad
sign already. You
know? And so I was like, well, obviously there's more to this story that the fan community, people plugged in like John know. So,
yeah. You heard the new Motorhead album yet?
No, I haven't.
It's not bad.
I was, because Aftershock, I thought, you know, I listened to it once, didn't listen to it again.
Yeah.
I felt the same way about The World Is Yours, the one before it. I thought Motorizer was very good, the one before it.
Yeah, it was. I mean, they're just basically, you know what you're getting yourself into when you hear those Motorhead albums.
Well, true. But like, I think the last Motorhead album that I listened to regularly is Inferno, probably.
Is that the one with, oh, Jesus Christ. What's that first track on it? I've gone blank.
Terminal Show?
No, it's not that one then. Okay. What's the one that's got Burner? Is that Motorizer?
Let me see.
I know that one I listen to a lot is Sacrifice. I reckon it's fantastic.
That's the last Motorhead album I love.
What, Sacrifice?
Sacrifices. I mean, because they've just been kind of treading water since. I mean, I know it's almost like expected of them, but it's just like, I honestly don't remember much out of the albums I've listened to for the last 15, nearly 20 years.
Right. Yeah. It was, you know, like Motorhead, it's, you know exactly what you're getting from them.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Like, I thought Motorizer was surprisingly solid. Thought that was pretty good. You know, then we got.
But they all are. They're all solid. They're just not. They're not memorable. They're solid, but they're not great, or you know.
Yeah, I mean they're solid, but I mean Motorizer, like I can hum songs from that record. World Is Yours and Aftershock, couldn't tell you, you know.
I can't tell them apart.
Yeah, exactly. Like they're just the same record. You know,
it's like he's gonna sing his song that alludes to either World War One or World War Two.
Yeah.
You know, he'll claim it's an anti-war song. You know, it just glorifies, you know, loud bombing sounds and stuff. He's going to have his sex song. He's going to have his, you know, badass song, revenge song. I mean, they follow a formula that's just, it's almost like they're just putting out, for the sake of putting out an album, they're just putting out an album. You know, it does remind me of what Paul Stanley and Gene Simmons have said. There's almost no point in doing new albums. Nobody buys them. People just want to hear your old stuff, so. What's the point?
Our friend Gene Simmons has been in the news as well recently. A lot of Kool-Aid drinkers out there for him as well.
Change your password, everybody. Change your password.
Change your password. Yeah.
Crime was committed.
Secure
while we were out of town.
I think you need to secure your routers. It's something I've learned. Steve Coronel has not been visiting me recently, so I have nothing to do with that pedophile. Yeah.
Really. Big Kool-Aid drinking.
Sorry, I put a post up about it, but then I saw other posts in Kiss things like, what color Kool-Aid are you drinking, guys? Seriously, you're buying this shit straight away. It's like, Gene's that fucking depraved. Because the thing is that people are forgetting is, like, he's probably not looking at pictures of, like, 8-year-old girls. You got to be under 18. Like, you know, and there's, as we've mentioned before in the past, they've not really sort of shied away from saying they've had younger girls in their time back in the day.
Oh yeah, all the rock stars.
Yeah. We've mentioned a number of times, but I mean,
Nugent, plus their manager Tyler. Plus their manager was a boy lover.
Oh yeah.
Oh yes, that was
which Paul Stanley pretends to be offended by in one chapter, and then he's crying at his funeral.
Yeah,
the next.
That's odd, isn't it? That was really bizarre.
A lot of these guys are really having problems facing up to the, you know, the sexual. The bastardization of sexuality that was going on in the 70s, and that was a common subject on like the Dr. Drew show and stuff. But it's like what happened with the Runaways with Jackie Fox that said she was raped, and it's still saying
Sheree
Curry.
I think it's Sheree Curry as well.
Lita Ford was asked about it on D. Snyder's show, and she didn't deny that it happened. You know, she said, she didn't say, oh, I don't know anything. But she just said, I wasn't there, but I'm not going to say it didn't happen. You know, like she pretty much confirmed it.
She's a straighter shooter than the others for the most part.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
She just says, I wasn't there, but like we all knew about it.
Yeah. Definitely.
She's opened up on other shows. I think on Corolla or Jay Moore's show, she said that there were sex lessons with the other band members.
Have you seen the documentary Edge Play about the Runaways? Mm-hmm. Oh, that's no. Oh, I don't mind the film. Okay, I'm gonna say it. I don't mind it. I think I put it in my top 10 when we did it a number of years back. But Edge Play, the documentary, is way better. It doesn't feature Joan Jett because she's protecting her brand by not being on it. But the other four on there, and it was done before the drummer Sandy West had passed away, it's pretty fucking intense. And they hate Kim Fowley. Hated him with a vengeance, yeah. Good documentary if you can find it. Not easy, one easy that's easy to get these days. It did get a DVD release here for a little bit, and I picked it up straight away. But, yeah, if it's on YouTube or one of the other streaming channels out there, definitely worth a watch, I'd say.
Like, you brought up Dr. Drew, John. You know, that's one thing that's like a recurring theme on that show is how the 70s, it was just such a sexually depraved time. Like, it was just...
Yeah, well, not only that, Ben Weasel brought this up on the last Weasel Radio podcast with Frank. They had Frank Portman from the Mr. T Experience on there, and he talked about how he said the 70s was like the weirdest decade when it came to, like, he's like, suddenly you would watch Fantasy Island on Saturday night because it was the only thing on, and you're a kid that can't go in. And he's like, you watch, and then there's references to swingers and key parties and stuff. And he said it was really freaky in the 70s. Like,
oh, that was right up Hervé Villechaize's alley, swingers.
Yeah. But he was talking about how that 70s, like, crazed, rampant hypersexuality was like a really, it was a really weird decade.
Excuse me, monsieur, can I look at your butt?
But yeah, Dr. Drew talks about it frequently. So it's like,
yeah, he hates the 70s. He's always like, I he even had like a live thing where he debated somebody on the 70s.
Oh, really? I gotta see that.
He debated Mike Carano on the 70s, and Mike Carano later admitted, he goes, you know, I thought I loved the 70s. And then I kind of realized a few things about it.
Everybody seems to have this retro love for the 70s. Like, I grew up throughout it.
Look through rose-tinted glasses.
Oh, you know, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
And one thing I've noticed about people is that people will go through a lot of lengths to justify shitty, depraved behavior. You know, yeah. They'll kind of go, oh, whatever you're into. People still do that today, and I go, no, I'm pretty sure if you're into this, that, or the other thing, you probably have something going on that you need to address. Yeah. You know, I think wife swapping is sick. I think swinging is sick. I think cheating is sick. I think group sex is sick. I think all these
group
things
group
are
sex is good fun. Shut up. When it's just me and a bunch of other women, it's fantastic.
But you know, I think there's symptoms of something worse, but people kind of go, oh, who are you to judge? You know, and I'm like, I don't think it's good for the soul. I don't think it's good for people. I don't think it's good for society. I don't think it's good for the family, you know. I think it's just not good for the family.
I don't believe in the soul, but I pretty much agree with you. It's bad for everything else.
Well, even the soul, like, just like the constitution of oneself, you know?
Oh, yeah, it's terrible for the mentality. I mean, you know. Like, look at what a Joe Q. Hefner is right now.
Oh, God.
Look how miserable Bob Guccione was when he died.
Yeah.
Well, is it, like, there's that documentary about Hugh Hefner, like, rebel activist, like, all these things. I'm like, really? Yeah. The guy was a pussy hound.
Really.
He just made it look like he was making a political statement.
It
just
gets and people go like, oh, it's like seeing a documentary called Hugh Hefner, like activist rebel. It's as ridiculous as saying I read Playboy for the articles. You know,
yeah,
it's as silly as that.
Oh, totally. Especially, it's like I'm still trying to figure out what he supposedly did that was so, you know, revolutionary.
You know, other publisher tits in a magazine.
Yeah, oh yeah, he got Norman Mailer to write for his Smut Mag and William S. Buckley, some really respected writers. So what?
That Norman, you know? Mailer.
I mean, I admit if you pick up those 70s Playboy, it's like a completely different magazine what you have today. Like,
oh,
other than, I mean, the nudity actually is maybe 10% of it. There was some really good writing in there, but there was also a lot of stupidity too. Like, if you read the Playboy Advisor or any of that, they had their little political forum. It's like, oh God, you guys are taking us to hell.
And they actually had bushes as well back there.
Yeah,
the 70s.
They didn't look like Gene Simmons's, computer hard drive.
or you know, like fleshy, you know, crash helmets or something like that.
And then also the women didn't have tattoos, which was really nice.
So that is a fucking epidemic these days. Women with tattoos with tramp stamps.
But actually, a friend of the podcast actually sent me a Playboy with Burt Reynolds on the cover, wearing rabbit ears with a playmate, and you can just tell he's cackling, doing his infamous thing. But I want to read it. There's like an interview with Bear Bryant, the infamous Alabama football coach, and there's actually a big interview with Burt Reynolds, supposedly his best ever. So it's like, I actually do want to read this. There was some content back then.
He would have
wasn't Burt Reynolds on the cover of Playgirl? That infamous spread where he was like,
That was in Cosmopolitan.
Oh, it was in Cosmopolitan? Really?
Yes, that was a mainstream thing. That was a very mainstream, regular thing, 1973, I believe, or 71. I think he was promoting Seamus around that time, but that was in Cosmopolitan.
Did Chris ever show you that Burt Reynolds spread koozie he had, Stu?
No, he didn't.
He had a beer koozie of the Burt Reynolds naked spread. Drink that watching Boogie Nights.
Yeah, man. Burt was the man in the 70s. Everybody forgets it now.
Yeah.
The celebrities that were in stuff like Playgirl, it would be like somebody who, an actor that everybody knew was gay, but there was no such thing as coming out back then, I think. George McHarris. It'd be somebody like that, you know.
Pete Steele.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He wrote that I Like Goyle song, which was like his anti-gay fan song.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's I can't believe that song. If that song was written today, it would get all the blogs would be calling for his head.
Oh God! If Straight Outta Compton came out today, it would be. Like, who the funk? They love all the anti-police stuff. That's like, no, they go nuts over the anti-gay stuff that's in their albums.
Oh yeah, there's yeah.
It's already up on iTunes and Vudu. That one, that's a pre-order. Like the things just come out of the theater. It's already up as a pre-order to fucking buy. It's crazy.
Yeah. Well, they probably weren't expecting it to do so well in theaters. I think they thought they were going to get like a decent.
Yeah, all of my students have seen it.
Yeah.
Yeah. They've all seen it. Y'all jokingly asked if they could write a paper on it for extra credit.
Just tell them, yeah, you write the paper, you'll be called Straight out of class if you do. Straight out of my class.
Straight out of class.
Yeah. Anything else you guys want to bring up?
Generator. I'm spent.
I think I'm done. This now, okay. What we've just done to you is actually highlighted how fucking boring modern news podcasts can be.
I know.
Up to the date, up to the minute, fucking news podcasts. It's like, okay, this came out. Yeah.
People actually do that?
They do, because they're actually thinking that Sirius or XM Radio are going to pick them up.
Are you kidding me? Get the fuck out of here.
It's true. And they think that they're going to be on the $500 million over 5 years salary like Howard Stern.
And
the
Sirius model is not exactly working that well.
It's been like a bomb for a decade now.
You know, was it even D. Snyder was even ragging on it on his podcast. He was like, the Sirius model, it's crap. Nobody makes money off Sirius.
Yeah, like that's because he was doing Fangoria Radio for him.
Yeah, he was.
He was doing a fucking.
Garo used to call in on.
Of course he did. There's a couple of Charles Bronson films getting a release.
Christmas? Was Obama there?
So it's a Bronson movie coming out?
Yeah. October 27, we're getting Ken Jitty on Blu-ray and Messenger of Death. Yeah.
And that's in Australia?
No. That's in Olive Films. Olive Films, US. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because Olive's doing some of the Paramount stuff and everything.
And we're getting also, of all the movies, we're getting Cheech and Chong's The Corsican Brothers. Why the fuck are we getting The Corsican Brothers for?
Everybody likes the trisexual joke. I mean, he's a trisexual. He'll try chickens, he'll try goats, and he'll try anything.
I forgot. Oh, we're also getting Burt Reynolds The End on Blu-ray, which is not great.
That probably has not aged well.
Yeah.
And this week, today, as we're recording this, Steve's favorite, Mad Max Fury Road, came out on Blu-ray.
That reminds me of the only joke I remember from Burt Reynolds' The End, where he vomited on like a glass table. And, of course, they showed it in Technicolor Glory. And then Burt says, looks like Walt Disney threw up.
We should call that a Technicolor yawn over here.
Yeah. That's the old phrase.
Oh, God. And Partners is getting a fucking Blu-ray release. You can believe that.
Yeah, they should release Pantyhose Hero instead.
next week, Wes Craven's Shocker gets a shout fact.
It actually is. Yeah, it actually is. Yeah.
It's not getting a Criterion.
No, not a Criterion release, shockingly.
Yeah, and it sucks.
Shocker!
It was one of the dumbest movies. That should have actually driven me away from the horror genre back in the 80s. I should have been done back then.
But on Criterion, we're getting Dressed to Kill.
That's a way better movie than Shocker.
Absolutely. No, I love Dressed to Kill.
It's crazy. Yeah, it's
Dressed to Kill is rad. It's just, it's already been available on Blu-ray. That's what's...
Yeah, for ages, yeah.
American Giallo, basically.
Yeah, totally. I love that stuff. But, when I saw that Criterion was releasing, I was like, it's already out on Blu-ray.
Criterion's a fucking double dip scam these days.
They are. They really are.
It totally is. Yes.
They're sitting on stuff that they've never released. And I mean, they stream a lot of it on Hulu, but they basically have just become a double dip company, a double dip factory for the studios.
Yeah. I'm still waiting for those bastards to release The Monkey's Head on a standalone disc.
When you come in Home Red Rider.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even mind getting their Easy Rider print on a standalone Blu-ray.
I think
I'm sure. I think that
it's gotta happen sooner or later. I just don't want to spend on the regular studio release,
right?
Yeah.
Although I'll probably watch it now and hate it and go, "Oh God, it's everything wrong with the country."
When was the last time you watched Easy Rider?
God, probably 20 years ago.
It's shit. Yeah, I watched it way less than that. It's just dumb.
Yeah,
it hasn't aged well, I would say.
Yeah.
Well, really it's funny,
I was talking about how much I dislike Harlan Ellison's essay stuff from the 60s, and a friend told me, who knows him, he's like, hyper-emotional writing like that, he goes, never ages well at all. And that's kind of how I'd view Easy Rider.
Yeah.
I mean, like there's good stuff. There's good sequences in it, but it has parts of the movie that just slam on the brakes and go nowhere, like the hippie commune shit.
Oh yeah,
Oh god damn! Like I can't, But I mean, that opening credit sequence with Born to Be Wild is pretty cool, there's just a lot of the motorcycle scenes are really cool, But it's just the hippie. It's the hippie bullshit in the movie that's just hard to take.
Because hippies are bullshit.
Yeah, hippies are.
Their whole movement was bullshit. It achieved nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Oh, I think it really fucked up the culture, to be honest.
Yeah.
It's what gave us that screwed up 70s culture with all this kid fucking and all that nonsense they were doing.
Oh, no, totally. Like, all the
gay rapes.
There was an explosion in pedophilia in the 70s, and it was totally due to that.
Oh yeah,
I mean, like look at the mamas and the papas,
Oh god!
I mean, that's like a microcosm for like a celebrity microcosm for what was going on.
The germ infestation, right there.
Yeah. Well, Papa John's like, Mama Cass is too fucking fat, so I'm sick to death of Michelle Phillips. So there's gonna be somebody else to go after. Little what's her name, Mackenzie.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why Arlo Guthrie became a conservative.
Yeah,
which must really piss off of his old hippie fans.
Oh, that's why you don't hear about. That's why you don't hear about him.
Because I heard in his concert, he's like praising Sarah Palin and stuff. So it's just like,
it's like Mo Tucker from the Velvet Underground.
Oh yeah, she's really conservative now.
Speaking of that, I'm sick to death of hearing about Donald Trump. Fucking people, let it go.
He's going to burn out soon.
You reckon?
Yeah, I think. I hope.
I got a Photoshop of the Stormtroopers of Death Speak English or Die, but it's got starred Donald Trump on it. March of Sergeant T. Can you do the Donald Mosh, you know?
Oh, my goodness.
But he's actually a...
I should have got the bonus track, ramming up your Trump.
Well, he's the TV narrative candidate. Supposedly he's not doing that great in actual polls, but on TV he seems to be the star.
Yeah.
And it's because he gives good television. I mean,
he totally knows how to work the media. Like,
yeah, he knows what he's doing. He gives good TV. That's why he's always on. Well, Jesus. They probably think he's the candidate now. It's like, you know, none of the Democrats right now can give good TV.
Jeez.
What, Bernie Sanders can't give good TV?
No, I'm afraid not. Sorry, all of the socialists out there. Just not going to do it.
Well, the new Iron Maiden album is due out in a couple of days.
Oh, boy.
90 Minutes of Boredom. It's a double album as well.
Can't wait.
I really can wait.
So excited.
They're on Spotify, right? You know, just
Maiden? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're on Spotify.
Of course they are.
I liked the new Speed of Light single. That was good.
Oh, I didn't like it at all. Also,
I liked it quite a bit. I listened to it a bunch. I thought it was fun.
Yeah, really. Why the fuck can't Maiden just pull out a 40-minute album, 8 or 9 tracks, done? Why do we need overblown pieces?
Yeah,
they can't pull it off.
Maybe they're 21:12 on this with the 20-minute House in the Clouds song.
But Rush can pull it off. Maiden really can't. They've done it once or twice. With
they're
that
old action. And pretentious, and that's what happens.
But Rush is still doing their stuff, and they can get away with it, you know? It's
just, because secretly they all wanted to be jazz musicians, so they're like, oh, this is kind of like we're doing our jazz album, you know, and they're just...
Why is Rush British all of a sudden?
Yeah, no, right.
No, I mean, I'm talking about Maiden. I don't know.
Oh, Maiden.
Oh, okay.
If I wanted to do Rush, I would just sound really gay.
Who was it that said that Rush are like the house band at MIT or something? I can't remember who it was. Someone said that Rush reminded them of the people going in for lunchtime and they were the house band playing at MIT.
Pretty much
right. I don't know who it was. All right. Oh, Jesus Christ, before we finish off. Here, Anna.
Ah.
16th of October, mate. You know he's got a new fucking album out.
He's got a new fucking album, mate.
It's fucking... Who do you fucking think it is if I'm talking like this?
Boy, I think it's fucking Saxon, mate.
It is Saxon, mate. You got a fucking...
Boy.
I've still never heard them.
Boy.
Get out of here, you cunt. I don't want to fucking talk to you.
Biff Byford's a fucking genius, mate. You know what I think?
What's that?
I think Biff Byford is better than Bruce Dickinson. You know, that's what I think.
I think you're right, mate. I think, like, I could actually... Bang, Biff, with that fucking long blonde hair of his.
Yeah, well, I ain't a fag of nothing, but if I were
so
gay,
wait.
I would have intercourse with Bruce Dickens, with Biff Byford, sorry, with yeah. Biff fucking Byford. Yes, I would. Oh, I ain't gay or nothing.
I'd actually walk around with a T-shirt that said I fuck Biff Byford all day long, mate, if I had that.
You would fucking hot dog it, mate.
Exactly. I'll be like,
you would go to the fucking Man United game.
Take this motorcycle, man, and jam up your ass. What do you think of that, mate?
I think
this could go along another 20 fucking minutes if we wanted to.
So wait, that T-shirt that Vivian wears on the Young Ones, that's a band?
Of course it is.
Okay.
This is a Saxon T-shirt.
I thought he was just saying he was descended from Saxon.
No, that's... Hey, John?
Yes.
Go. Just leave now.
Never heard them. They sing about cannons and, I don't know, Cromwell. All
that Oi! Wheels of fucking steel, mate.
Wheels of steel, mate. Like,
So they're kind of like Richard Harris. Like, if he had a band, it'd be Saxon.
Oi, Biff Byford, fucking, he got together with fucking Lemmy and they did Starstruck by Rainbow. Know what I'm mean?
So like, is Oliver Reed in the band?
He should be. He really should.
You know what? If Oliver Reed was in fucking Saxon, mate, it would be the house band in fucking heaven. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, don't make me laugh. I got this.
Oh. Or at least at the fucking Guinness plant.
I get them all confused with Focus. Focus, Rocket. What's the other one?
Oh, boy, don't you compare fucking Saxon to Dokken, mate. That's
oh, yeah. Dokken's LA, right? That's Don. Yeah.
Don Dokken's a little gay cunt, and Biff's like Biff Byford, mate.
Right. Dokken the Dream Warriors for the.
Although I would like, you know what? I would like to hear. I would like to hear George Lynch collaborate on a track with Biff Byford. I think that would be fucking mint, mate.
No, fuck that. No. He's one of those fucking Yanks. There ain't no fucking Yanks in Saxon, mate.
Oh, fuck
it's not
Yanks.
Called. It's not called Yankson. It's called Saxon.
Only fucking Lemmy. You're right. Only Lemmy.
Well, Lemmy's a pom as well, you twat. Didn't you know that, mate?
So I'm wondering, are the guys in Venom, are they as like as thick, have a thick accent as
Oh, God,
in-
yeah. Really? Oh, have you heard?
You know what they do? They go, you go like, so, guys in Venom, what's going on? You know what? Henry Rollins is a fucking twat.
King Diamond's a fucking misguided wanker.
Henry hasn't made an album in 10, 20 fucking years because he's not a fucking musician.
Are they right?
Venom are hysterical in their interviews because it's completely a fucking...
Henry,
it's all an act. It's
Black
all.
Flag were hiding in the fucking back while we were out front rocking out. Yeah. All this stuff.
I gotta go read their interviews.
The fucking bullshit.
Oh, you know, they see the interviews on YouTube. The funniest interviews ever with Motorhead. They're so fucking funny. There's one where there's like an hour and 10 minute documentary about them, and Lemmy's being interviewed, but behind him, Filthy Phil is at the bar when he was still in the band back then. And Lemmy's going, and I saw this guy walk in, and he was ugly as fuck. And and Filthy goes, not as ugly as you, you cunt.
I still haven't seen that Lemmy documentary.
It's good.
It's all right.
It has these moments in it that really fucking gross me out.
You know, actually, I was watching this series called The Final 24. They're a few years old now, which is, you know, the final 24 hours of somebody's life. And I watched the Sid Vicious one. And you know who was actually when he was released from prison and his mother went and bought him all that heroin and shit and ended up dying in that hotel room? You know who was actually in that hotel room that night, that party of about 10 people? Jerry Only.
Yeah, he was.
I did not know that.
He hung out with Sid. And like back then,
jeez,
blue hair. Yeah,
wow.
Gavin McInnes is convinced that Rocket's red glare killed Nancy Spungen.
Who?
Rocket's red glare. He's an actor. He was in a talk radio.
Who plays that the junkie in talk radio.
Yeah, he's the guy who shoots Eric Bogosian at the end of Talk Radio.
Yeah, the one who does the Megadeth. He's talking about Megadeth or something like that.
Yeah, or don't was that Rocket's Red Glare? Because I know he's at the very end. He pops out. He's got like crazy bad teeth. He's a scary looking dude.
Okay,
and he shoots Eric Bogosian at the very end of the movie. And he played a pimp in Jim Jarmusch's Down by Law, and he's been in some other movies too, but he was good friends with Steve Buscemi. But he was a big time, like, I think he was like, I think his mom was a junkie, and he was a heroin dealer. And if you look up stuff about him and Sid Vicious and Nancy Spungen, there are a lot of theories about him being the person who actually killed Nancy.
Jesus.
Yeah, uh-huh. But yeah, he was a big time junkie. But yeah, you see him pop up in movies occasionally. He's a real redneck looking motherfucker, like crazy bad teeth, like puffy face, like splotchy red skin, like just the guy looks – he looks like an alcoholic, but apparently he was a big drunk.
No, of course. Of course he's friends with Steve Buscemi, right?
Yeah, no, so Steve Buscemi used to be a raging alcoholic.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think he's in AA or recovery or something.
He used to be a stand-up comic, too.
Oh, I believe it.
Didn't know that. Okay. Yep. All right, I think we're out of gas. What do you reckon?
Right. We were. I think we're done.
Yeah, so what do you reckon, guys? Nice and informative, this one.
Yeah, this was the news of the day, news of the world episode.
News of the world.
Or call it the worst show ever.
Yeah, pretty much. Worst, this is what you get if you just want us to follow current events.
Worst episode ever, current events.
Yeah, current events.
News of the world, worst episode ever. There you go.
There you go. There's a title of it there.
So, the big robot on the cover of the Queen album should be holding our corpses.
That's shit. We should have flaming android skeletons and like a Frank Frazetta monster.
Yeah. All right.
Look like an Iron Maiden cover.
All right. Or a Saxon cover, mate. All right. So we'll be back next week. Back to normal programming. This is just a throwaway one we did. This is literally a fucking throwaway. If this one ends up getting the most fucking downloads, I will just be stunned beyond words. I'll be like, what are we doing now?
What happened? Plus, I'll go on a Dick Gregory starvation diet.
Let's say our guest is Rick Myers. That way we might get some extra downloads.
No, it'll kill the downloads right there.
Yeah, right. All right. All right, well, we're back to normal programming next week, and what we're doing yet, we don't know.
Yeah, we know. We know what we're doing.
Oh, we know. Okay, well, I don't know. Idea. Well, it's because I'm clueless, that's all.
We got ideas.
We're doing that convince each other thing.
Oh, yes, that's right. Gotcha.
Justify your film.
Justify your
DVD.
All right, say goodnight.
Adios.
Mahalo.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast. To leave feedback and show suggestions, email us at midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like our Midnight Movie Cowboys show page on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and feel free to leave us a review. Listen to us on Stitcher.com or the Stitcher Radio app. Want to help the show out? Visit MidnightMovieCowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate link. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Our personal links are on the right side of our homepage. See y'all next time.
Fifteen.